Bij ons is de New Yorkse auteur Sue Hitzman. Zij ontwikkelde de meltmethode, een unieke methode tegen chronische pijn en het verhogen van ontspanning. Ze schreef hier tevens een zelfhulpboek over, welke recentelijk in het Nederlands is uitgebracht. Zometeen schakelen we over in het Engels en praten we met haar over de meltmethode. Sue, welcome at Hello Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice for being here. You came all the way from New York to the Netherlands. How do you like Amsterdam so far?
It's beautiful. It kind of makes you realize how not old America is. I mean, it really, you get to see a lot of the richness of other countries and, you know, what I think America was founded on, these communities. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Nice to hear that.
Do you have a solution for our bike problem here in Amsterdam?
I don't, but my heavens, you do have quite an abundance of bike riders, which is inspiring. My assistant was here and she said, is it me or is everybody looking lean and healthy? And I said, I think it's because they all ride bikes everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we do ride bikes a lot here.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah.
You're a therapist and author of the book The Melt Method, an extraordinary method to reduce chronic body pains, which sounds and is really wonderful, I think.
Yeah.
Could you explain a bit more what the Melt Method exactly is?
Melt is a self-treatment technique that people can do at home on their own. It simulates a lot of the therapeutic techniques that I would do with my own hands. And it's a way to educate people on what causes pain to become chronic and solutions for them to empower themselves, to help themselves get out of pain and to reduce the need for medication and surgeries and things of that nature.
Okay. And so how did you come up with the idea to do that?
I was a neuromuscular therapist in the early 90s. I got introduced to hands-on body work and I was able to help athletes and people who had gotten injured get out of pain. And in the late 90s, when I had thought, you know, in my late 20s, I was just the smartest person. I knew everything about anatomy and physiology at that point. And I had my own chronic pain and none of
you had your own chronic pain.
How did that happen? I woke up one day and my foot hurt me. And at first I thought I had stepped on a piece of glass. Like it was just, it came out of nowhere.
Right.
And it was so mysterious to me because I was an athlete when I was younger. And so breaking bones, spraining my ankle, you know, I've had injuries. And the nice thing about acute pain is it's, you know, kind of your built-in alarm system that tells you something's not right. It's a little, you know, it's self-limiting.
Right.
Once you heal, it goes away. But this pain kind of came out of nowhere and it lingered and then it got worse and it became quite a body-wide issue for me. And to try to find a solution beyond medicine and surgery or exploratory surgery, which seemed to be the options that the doctors were giving me,
yeah.
I went out to just try to discover what was it that, why was my body not healing? And I stumbled upon this emerging field of fascial research. And, you know, it wasn't that I didn't know about connective tissue, but I had never really thought of it as a conduit or a problem causing pain. And the more I started to understand it, I started getting trained in other techniques that actually worked with the fascia and with other components besides muscles and bones. And I started sharing those techniques with my clients. And what was profound is I saw clients getting better faster, but in there lied a bigger problem, was that I kept seeing, though, that people kept having to come back to me. Like it wasn't
all the time. Yeah.
It was just, you know, constantly coming back. And I thought, and a client of mine had said to me, you know, if you could just invent a way for me to do to myself what you do with your magic hands, I'd stay out of your office entirely. And I thought, I don't even think that's possible. These are such light touch techniques. I don't think that's possible, but I don't know. I guess it sparked that. I had never thought about it. You know, I wonder if I could actually develop something that could decompress somebody's neck or help somebody's jaw pain or decrease a migraine. And I started to play around with balls and rocks and rollers. I came up with this idea of taking a piece of PVC piping. I wrapped it in bubble wrap. I wrapped it in a yoga blanket. And then I wrapped it in a yoga mat and I duct taped the thing together.
Yeah.
And I started to apply these more gentle compression techniques to my body. And sure enough, one day I knew I had done something to myself. I shared it with clients. And what I thought was just an incredible aha moment for me was that these people, you know, most often you treat them and you knew the second they walked out their door, they were going to mess up all your good work.
Yeah.
And so
it's always like
my clients were coming back in and I was like, I think you held all the changes. Like this is, and I finally got to move them. Real change. I started moving them a little further. So instead of having to see them 10 or 20 times, I could limit it down to 3 or 4 times, get them on a track of healing, and then their bodies just did it themselves. And then they had a tool that they could go home and do it to themselves.
Okay.
And that was just a super inspiring time for me.
Of course.
Just kept developing more techniques. And by 2004, I had, at that point I had worked on thousands of people. And I just thought, gosh, I think I really have something here. I think I could maybe keep people out of my office by just sharing these simple things.
But is that you really wanted to keep them out? Because it's also business, right?
It is, but I guess that was the thing. And when I started sharing self-care with my clients, I thought the same thing. Gosh, people are not going to need me anymore if I develop this thing. What would they need me for? And the opposite happened. People started referring their friends to me and their friends to me. And I went from seeing 30 people a year to over 500 people in a year. I mean, it jumped that fast.
But they are also inspired by the fact that they wouldn't need to keep coming into your office like all the time, but maybe for 4 or 5 times or maybe 10 times, but still, you know, it's not a forever situation.
Yeah, I think that was it, was that I kind of instilled some hope in people and I empowered them to realize that they couldn't rely on just me to get well. They had to actively participate. I would create a relationship with them. I could help them. I could open a door to change, but they had to take the steps to walk through it and continue that journey on their own. And I think that was what was really inspiring to me, was even people who are really suffering with chronic problems, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, it just kind of cracked the egg of hope that maybe I could get better. And that's the first step in healing, is going back into your body, forming a belief that your body does have the ability to heal.
How long did it take before your foot healed?
It was almost 2 years. It was about 18 months. And by that 18th month, I mean, I was just so down and out. I was like, I just remember telling a story of I crawled to the bathroom in the middle of the night to go pee. And I just remember one day I was literally sitting next to my toilet, just crying, thinking, this is never going to go away.
Yeah.
I have injured myself for good. The rest of my life is looking grim. My future, I was projecting my future to be this terrible thing.
Yeah.
And that was scary. I mean, being in your 20s and just thinking, this is it. And there was just a part of me that just, I've got to find a solution. I can't live the rest of my life. I'm aging. And I've always had this fascination with aging. What is it about aging that kills us? Why is aging such a demise? You know,
you can age well, of course.
Exactly. Well, then, and that was what it was how do you live a long, healthy life? I don't just want to add years to a lack of quality life. I want to enhance my life today so that I can live longer, but live better longer. But, you know, doctors aren't saying you're going to live better longer. They're just adding years to the end of life because they're able to keep you alive longer.
Are you familiar with the author Wayne Dyer?
Of course.
You think this would fit in his philosophy?
Oh, of course. Of course. I think that, you know, I think all of these things are that complementary idea of, you know, belief, and your beliefs can formulate your future.
Definitely.
Yes, absolutely. I think they're very complementary concepts.
And the healthcare industry, how did they respond on this?
Actually very, very positively. But the problem with, I think, at least in, you know, America, and I think it's worldwide, is that people think they're proactive. But what we really are is reactive. We do things after we have a problem. We don't really do things to prevent it. And going to a doctor to get advice on how to prevent going into their office,
it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. That's it. They call it a medical practice for a reason, because they're practicing on you.
Yeah.
Yes. So they don't want you to not show up. They need people in their office to practice.
Yeah.
So they're not about to say, oh, I'll tell you how to not have to, you know, take medicine or have surgeries, because that's what their practice is about, is medicine and surgery. Why would they tell you to not need their practice? It makes no sense. I think that, you know, you could think that there would be pushback, but in fact, I think that if you have really honorable doctors, they don't want you to be sick, but when you are, they have solutions. And so there's a place for both.
Yeah. And it's an important place as well, because if you can work together in some way, that's always a good thing to do.
Yeah, I always say melt and even hands body work is not an alternative therapy. It's a complementary therapy.
Yes, it is.
You need both. You know, if you have an acute trauma, you know, you break a bone, you want to go to a doctor. But chronic pain is very eluding to people. Like it eludes them on how to fix it. And the problem with pain in general is that there's a gap between acute and chronic. And I call that sudden chronic pain. And that is caused by repetition. It's called by daily living. And doctors don't have a cure for repetition.
Yeah.
But we actually can help us reduce the negative effects of our repetitive lifestyles. Repetition makes you good at doing things, but it is also a big problem because the more you repeat a motion, the more chance you have of creating lines of strain and imbalances.
So true. Yeah, because just a little bit earlier, we were talking about all the people here in Amsterdam riding their bikes. And we'd like to get a little bit deeper into that. We'll be back in a moment.
Downtown, walking fast, faces pass and I'm homebound. Staring blankly ahead, just making my way through the crowd. And I need you, and I miss you, and now I wonder if I could fall into the sky. Do you think time went past me by? 'Cause you know I'd walk a thousand miles if I can just see you tonight.
Like I said before the break, we were talking about all the people here in Amsterdam riding their bikes. They look very fit and flexible, but not everybody is, of course.
Sure.
Many people do suffer from chronic body pains, and there are also many therapeutic forms out there to reduce or possibly eliminate body pains while keeping the body in a flexible shape. What makes the MELT method any different from all these other methods?
It's a really good question. So I think what really makes MELT different is what we're focusing on specifically. So, you know, again, I would say lots of people diet and exercise and feel like they do all the right things to lead an active, healthy life. But that doesn't mean that you're going to not have pain. I hate to say this, but lots of people eat right and exercise and still have chronic pain. It's kind of the dirty little secret of fitness, is most of the fitness professionals are also injured. You know, again, that repetitive stress injury is very common.
Yeah.
So what I'm focusing on is really the properties of connective tissue. And MELT to me is not only just a method, it's a way for me to educate the general public on cellular biology, on cell science, on neuroscience in a very simple way so that they can understand what's missing. What's the missing link of healthy, active lifestyles? If you're already eating right and you're exercising and you have pain, What else is there in the body? And the thing I can tell you is most people don't know what connective tissue is. They don't know how it affects the nervous system, cells, your immunity, your movements, but it has a relationship and a connection with all of those things. And so what the MELT method teaches people is how to identify if their connective tissue system is not functioning efficiently, as well as to define what connective tissue is and how it plays a role in all of these things: function, movement, form, fitness.
Exactly. Okay, so that makes the difference, of course. Yeah. As seen in your book, there are special tools. The tools are used while doing the MELT workout?
Yeah.
Is it always necessary to work with these tools?
Well, the tools basically are a way to simulate hands-on techniques. So what I use are soft balls and soft rollers to give connective tissue the time it needs to adapt to compression and to also give the nervous system time to adapt to intervention.
Okay.
So you can do some of, like I would say, if you didn't have the MELT tools, but you saw the book, if you could find soft tools to utilize, I think that you could probably learn the technique and try other things. But, you know, I developed tools that don't have any toxic chemicals. There's no phthalates in it. They last a long time. They're durable and they're safe and effective to use. And, you know, the shape and density and size of it, of all of the tools are very specific. You know, like the balls are the size of my thumb, the size of my elbow, because those were the tools I was using with my clients. The roller is smaller and much softer. I mean, I think a lot of people probably listening have heard of something called self-myofascial release, which are like foam rollers. And the thing about foam rolling, and people see the melt method, and so they think, oh, it's foam rolling. And I say, actually, we don't really roll very much in melt. We shear tissue and we stimulate the nervous system. So it's actually kind of a different process. But the other thing that I think also makes it unique is, again, the awareness components to it, to the four R's of melt. The first R is reconnect. And the one thing I know about people in pain is they want to tune it out and they're very out of their body. They want to ignore it. They don't want to feel it. They don't want to talk about it. They just want somebody to make it stop. But the first thing that you must do if you're in pain is get back into your body, become more self-aware of how your daily life is perhaps perpetuating the pain problem. And again, that's what they learn in the MELT method, is how to identify what I call pre-pain signals before it becomes pain.
Yeah.
I call it stuck stress, right? When connective tissue lost its elastic properties, when it doesn't react and respond to movement and then sustain its shape, we feel pain. Our joints get too close together, our muscles get strained, our body, our nervous system becomes exhausted because it's got to work so hard just to keep you standing upright. And what, you want to move too? Your body's like, whoa.
Well, but that's when people do say like, oh, I need to get some rest. I need to sleep a little bit more, or I need a massage or something like that.
Yeah.
And then for a couple of hours or even for a couple of days, it's gone. And you don't think that there's something going on in the body.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Is even if you sleep in on the weekends, it doesn't really make a dent with this issue in connective tissue. My explanation to people is, you know, pain, 100% of the time, your brain is what's producing your sense of pain. It's again, built-in alarm system to alert you that something's not right. The problem is that when we get some of those signals, it's like your toaster's on fire and you walk over to the alarm and take out the battery. And I'm like, but the toaster's on fire. You're not fixing the problem. You're numbing down the alarm system.
Right.
And that's a problem, because the thing that we do is we wait for those alarms to go off, and they've actually probably been going off a long while, but we kind of miss these pre-pain signals of connective tissue and the nervous system trying to alert us that something's not right.
And that's when it becomes chronic as well.
Exactly. And so what I've figured out a way to do, I mean, with my hands, I kept finding these identifiable imbalances in clients, client after client after client who suffered with chronic pain. And I started thinking, I wonder if these are some of the common imbalances that all people have when they have pain. So I started teaching MELT in 2004 after working on thousands of people in a private practice. I thought maybe I could explain this to people and develop a language so that they could understand what fibroblasts are and what connective tissue is. And so that was it. I started trying to talk people through the self-care technique, and I would have them lie down and do a self-assessment, and I would point out these common imbalances that many people possess that are left unaddressed from day to day. And these were the ones that, in my opinion, were compressing the neck and low back.
Right.
They were destabilizing our natural core stability and causing dysfunction to grow and arise and accumulate in the body. And client after client, they were feeling it. I would treat them using MELT. I would have them lie back down on the floor and reassess. And I would say, how many of you guys don't feel these imbalances? And you would just see hands going up and thinking, I didn't touch any of these guys. And they made the changes and they felt the changes. And that to me was what was powerful, was that people could melt one time and feel its effect. And that's empowering, because when you're in pain, your world gets awfully small. You can't change. Like, that's the problem. You get stuck. So MELT was a way to make people realize, my gosh, I actually have within me the ability to stimulate my own healing properties and get myself out of pain. That was new, innovative, and exciting. And that's what we did.
Really? Yeah.
Sue, post-traumatic stress is also an issue nowadays. Why can some people deal with it and others don't?
Well, I guess that's a really big question. That was actually my rude awakening was in the 90s. I was working mostly with athletes who had gotten injured. So I was dealing with acute trauma. And I live in New York City. And when 9/11 happened, I got the rude awakening of what post-traumatic stress disorder could do to people. And that is a perplexing thing. Why can some people manage stress better than others?
Yeah.
And we don't really know why that is, but you know, all of us are built with an autonomic nervous system that manages stress, repair, and digestion. And for some people, if you think of stress as being something that occurs in a waking state, right? So it's not just when you have a stressful situation, but all living is stressful. And I think what's happening is in this day and age, the way that the autonomic nervous system should work is that stress comes in and, you know, we get all these neurological changes, your eyes dilate, maybe you perspire, your heart rate increases, and then you have a parasympathetic or rest and repair state that kind of brings the stress back down and induces response of repair. But most people today are stress all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And they're not realizing that if you are always in a stress state, it actually alters your own body's ability to repair. It almost suppresses your own autonomic responses. And that can then in turn cause a lot of more notable problems like digestive problems, sleep issues. And the thing is, at night, when you sleep, that's where cellular repair is dominant. So if you're not getting a restful night's sleep, you're waking up the next day with a backlog of stuck stress, and that's going to accumulate. And so I think with a lot of people, they don't realize that they are in fact not managing their stress. They're just dealing with it.
Until it becomes a burnout.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all it takes is just one real traumatic event, and it just sends them over the edge.
Yeah.
And that can create chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia. I think it is what causes dis-ease or disease in the body, is a body that cannot rest. It doesn't repair naturally. And that is what I think a lot of people are up against, especially our youth. You know, they are just inundated with so much stress, and they know so much. I think to myself, gosh, when I was 11, I don't know if I even knew who the president of the United States was, you know what I mean? Or like what politics were. But now you're seeing, you know, terrorism, and you're seeing murders and
everything.
I mean, it's scary.
It's limitless.
It really can stress bodies out, and it can create ill repair where your body just, it's just too much repair that needs to happen and the body cannot do it.
I also was wondering about the tools that you developed. Did you develop them on your own or together with a team? Or you did
no,
it on your
I,
own?
No, you know, there were no soft rollers out on the market when I first developed it. And so when I started sharing this with my clients, I was also doing it to myself. And I was still teaching in fitness. And these women one day cornered me and said, all right, out with it. And I said, out with what? And they said, did you get Botox? I thought, Botox? What are you talking about? They're like, you look younger. Like, why? Why do you look so young? I said, you know, I've been doing this gentle compression on my jaw and my head. I think it's kind of giving my face a lift. And they're like, why are you holding out on us? So all of a sudden I thought, geez, maybe I could, you know, make some more. So I made 25 little makeshift rollers, and that was it. I started to do it. And then I started to research, were there any other tools on the market that were like this? And I tried all different things and nothing worked. I reached out to a company that manufactured products.
Right.
And I had them develop my first roller. And then when I went out on the first book tour, I went to Middle America. I went to the general rural areas, and that I feel like, for lack of a better word, I kind of had a little bit of a meltdown. I was a little shell-shocked at what was coming into
the
room.
You're from New York.
You know, I'd gotten on the Dr. Oz show, and, you know, people came from all walks of life, people with walkers and IVs attached to their arms, oxygen tanks.
Wow.
I mean, people in wheelchairs came to experience this method, and I thought, my gosh.
Must be overwhelming for you.
It was very, I mean, it was really an amazing time of my life, and so I made a smaller roller that more people could use, and I think that's been why it's gravitated to so many people, is that at any age, at any fitness level, anybody can melt. It's very simple, it feels good when you do it, and it makes instant results. So I think that's why people have gravitated toward the methodology.
In the Netherlands, Dr. Mehmet Oz is also a very well-known person. How did he respond on your melt method and the tools?
Actually, it was kind of amazing. I've been on his show 5 times now, and the first time I went on, I had never done any media, and I had just gone out on the book tour, and my team was like, sit down. I said, no, I'm so excited. They were like, you need to sit down. You're going to be on the Dr. Oz show. And I said, I know I'm going to get on his show. They're like, no, you're going on a show. And so I got on his show, and we went through the run through, and I had stopped him, and I said, Dr. Oz, I don't want you to just like, you know, bullshit America. I want you to actually understand what this is. Would you just take 5 minutes and let me melt you for 5 minutes so you can feel it?
Oh,
and
he
stopped his entire crew, and he was like, okay. And he got on the ground, and I pointed out 3 of the imbalances. I said, do you feel this? Do you feel this? Do you feel this? He says, yes. I go, come up on the roller. And I said, these are some of the techniques. I had him do it. Come off the roller. I said, what do you feel now? And he goes, wow.
Amazing.
And I said, do you feel it? And he's like, my ribs are down. Back of my legs are down.
Right.
He goes, did somebody teach you this? I said, no, I just invented it through my private practice. He's like, you really have something there. And that was it. I think I created good rapport with him. And I think America and whoever watched that show heard the message and really heard something that I said that thought, gosh, that I think she could help me. And that was it. I went out on this book tour, and just people came who probably are sitting at home watching his show because they do lead a sedentary life. And those were the people that came. And it really transformed me. I think it really built a big empowerment of me that I thought, I really do have something that could help anyone. If they're willing to walk in the door, I'm willing to help them. And, you know.
Yeah. That's great. So you came back 5 times?
Yeah.
And he knows you're married, right?
Yes.
Okay.
A good man. Well, he's quite a decent fellow, I must say. Real genuine soul.
Yeah. Yeah, great. That's cool to hear.
Yeah, nice. He's amazing.
You're also a co-founder of the Fascia Research Society.
I am a founding member, yes, of the Fascia Research Society, yeah.
Could you tell us a bit more about this society?
Sure. So in 2004, Tom Findlay, who is a clinician and a practitioner in the States, had brought other clinicians together and researchers and said, we need to found a research society. There's so much research coming out, and we need to get researchers together to share their work so that we can bring more information out there. Scientists don't really share their work. They
don't go there.
Ready to put out, like, they've gotten their published paper. They don't want to talk about something that's not published yet.
And it can take for several years.
Yes. So 2004, he started talking about it. 2007, we had our very first Fascia Research Congress in Boston at Harvard University.
Okay.
And 150 researchers came and shared their work. And what was incredible was that although everybody had different abstracts or different theories, the conclusions were very similar. And since that time, you know, these pioneers, Dr. J.C. Gumberto, Robert Schleip, there's so many of them.
Big names.
Are now coming together. And it really is, I think we are right at the edge of a tremendous change, because we are now, because of technology, we're able to look at fascia on a microscopic level. And for me, what I think is, you know, the science has finally caught up to so many clinicians as well as myself, the theories and the ideas or what you're feeling or what you think is happening. And now we have research both validating or clarifying or refining ideas that have been here for years.
Ages, yeah.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's not like as if fascia is a new thing. I mean, fascia has been written about for thousands of years. It's been in the literature, the lymphatic system. It's been in research for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But now we actually have ways to test and measure it. That this year, when we had the 5th International Congress in Berlin, I mean, I actually think I was just as excited this year, a decade later, than I was when I saw Dr. J.C. Gumberto's interior architectures and looking at this. He strolled under the skin with these high-powered micron microscopes.
Yes.
Now they have confocal laser microscopes. So they're able to look at tissue many layers deeper and you know, like so much more closely. We really can see the nucleus of cells
and now you're
like that.
Part of it.
Yes, it's amazing. I feel like I got lucky. I got taken under the wing of these pioneering researchers. I mean, I just have taken their science and applied it into a method.
And now you're sitting here at Hella Radio.
What is really great, because I understand there are also research groups all over the world, and there's also one here at the FU Amsterdam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's really incredible. I have to be honest, the majority of the fascial research is coming out of these regions, in fact, in the Netherlands, in Germany, Austria. I mean, like the US, we are slow on the uptake because, again, I think that we are not socialists. We are not so supportive. We don't really have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system. And insurance is completely messed up. Big pharma controls things. And here's the bad news about fascia. They are not going to find a pill that you can take to fix your fascia. It is in you. You can do it to yourself. And that's why there's not a lot of US research. You know, if they're not going to find a pill or a surgery that can fix it, then there's not going to be lots of money funded. That's the thing.
About the research group that is here in Amsterdam at the VU, the university, what kind of research do they provide or exchange with the Fascia Research Society?
Some of it is clinical research where they're actually using human subjects, but most of it is in biology, is cell biology. They're testing and measuring through using mice and animals to understand both biomechanical behavior, structural components on a microscopic level. So a lot of the research that's being done is in microscopy.
Okay, that's very important to know. Yeah?
Yes.
This Fascia Research Society also holds international congresses on diverse topics. What kind of diversity are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, if you think of somebody like Peter Friedel, he's trying to understand how connective tissue plays a role or how the tissues adapt with disease. We had Neil Thies, who is from NYU, and he's a surgeon, and he found in the biliary duct these small pre-lymphatics that it's like this new thing. We found the interstitium, but really we've known about the pre-lymphatic system, but he just didn't realize that that's what he was looking at because it wasn't in his radar.
Right.
So that was really compelling. They had a lot of, Frank Willard was there. Carla Stecco, like these are amazing researchers who have been around for decades, bringing movement, science, and research into clinical practice. So a lot of these researchers are doing dissection and movement. I think that the biggest paradigm shift that needs to happen now is that all of these wonderful researchers are so used to talking to other researchers that the conundrum is that the majority of the people coming to the Fascial Research Congress are clinicians who don't have cell biology. I just happen to be one of the ones that understands them both.
Yeah.
So there's this gap of wonderful information then being able to translate over into application. And so, you know, again, for me, the MELT method really spawned out of being a part of the science. And the thing is, scientists, they're brilliant at what they do. They don't necessarily know how to apply it to humans.
Exactly.
But they know that it's important. And so I feel like I've been the person to say, don't worry, I'm going to take your science and I'm going to see if I can actually do something. And now we're actually at a place where now the researchers are saying, we need to now test and measure the MELT method. And so we had our very first published research paper on low back pain. We've had another research paper that ideally is going to be published next year on foot issues and the architecture of the foot.
And I also read something about for pregnant woman, pregnancy.
Yeah.
Is that about the back?
Same thing, you know, like a lot of women after pregnancy, back pain is very prevalent. And so the question is why? And again, you know, with the research, we're understanding more about type 1 and type 3 collagen and the difference between these two systems and what happens when you're pregnant is that women are having more type 3 collagen developed and that makes them loosey-goosey, which is what allows the belly to expand without the abdomen ripping open.
Yeah, exactly.
But then sometimes post-pregnancy, there's still an abundance of type 3 collagen that doesn't then turn back over to type 1, which is more the collagen that makes tissue strong and durable. Yeah. And so that's why a lot of women postpartum have low back pain, pelvic floor problems, because the type 3 doesn't return to type 1. It's a big deal.
What about mood swings?
Well, again, I mean, you know, connective tissue is the supportive infrastructure of all systems, not just your muscles and bones, but on a cellular level. So one of the big concepts of fascia that we're really looking at also with Carla Stecco's work is how estrogen also plays a role in connective tissue's stability. If connective tissue stays in what I call a dehydrated state, a state where it's lost its elastic properties,
yeah.
that irritates and exhausts the nervous system. The body's got to work harder and harder and harder as you age.
It's not so flexible anymore.
Exactly. To do the same things that you used to do with, you know, no problem, like get up out of a chair. Now all of a sudden, it's like you sit in a chair too long and you get up, you think you aged 40 years because your joints don't move as well as it did before.
Yeah.
And that causes a lot more distress and, again, accumulative stress. And as your nervous system becomes exhausted, you do now have a higher tendency to have issues that seem completely unrelated to connective tissue issues, like trouble digesting food, depression, anxiety, emotional trauma.
Yeah, and that's the whole package of all the mood swings altogether.
Hormonal issues. Yeah. All of these things are all related because on a chemical level, collagen is kind of like a superconductor that's communicating body-wide. It actually has a frequency to it. And if it doesn't function efficiently, this can create tremendous impact on a cellular, on a neurological, and a neurochemical level, as well as hormones, neurotransmitters, and all of these other components of healthy living can actually break down because fascia is not supportive.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
Very important. It's a big deal for sure. The first edition of MELT, it came out in 2013,
yes.
I believe. And according to the New York Times, your book became a bestseller right away.
It did. Is that crazy?
Did you expect this to happen?
Well, I mean, I was told by my editor, I said, I'm going to put this book on the New York Times bestsellers list. We're going to transform people's lives. And she laughed and she said, oh, dear, it's very that's very sweet that, you know, you are so ambitious to do this. But nobody knows who you are. And, you know, New York Times bestsellers lists are for, you know, notable authors. And I said, I just don't think you know who you're talking to. I just said, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do this thing. And I had already had instructors. I mean, today I've got 2,000 instructors worldwide in 28 countries, a book in 10 languages. So like now I'm there.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, we had a small contingency, but we had people who really, I transformed people's lives. And so when that book came out, it hit the market and people actually gravitated toward it. And I have to definitely, you know, say thank you for Dr. Oz for believing enough in the method to let me come on his show.
You were on his show before the book came out?
No,
or
right after.
Oh, yep, right after.
Right after.
Okay.
And that hit the New York Times again. And
sure,
then we hit it again and again. And I really, you know, would put a lot of that to Dr. Oz and his reach and his belief. And yeah, I mean, it's been really an amazing ride.
Kind of a roller coaster for you?
It's more just like an uphill battle to just keep going. You know, I think you realize being a female business owner too, it's very hard to, you know, find the help and understand, you know, you got to understand marketing, PR and all these other things. And how does a website work? And how do you get your message out?
Is that the downside of the whole story?
Yes, I think so. But I really would say to anybody who has a belief in what they do that you just have to stick with it. If you have something that you know will help people, you just keep going. And so I feel like all these years later, you know, I still push and move, and it doesn't matter all of the obstacles that are in my way. I just know it just what keeps me going.
Wonderful. Yeah. Nice. We'll be back in a moment.
She says I'm walking in a straight line. That's not really her style. And they all got the same heartbeat, but hers is falling behind. Nothing in this world could ever bring them down. Yeah, they're invincible, and she's just in the background. And she says, I wish that I could be like the cool kids.
You already explained to us how it happened, that it became a bestseller as well. And you worked very hard to get it out there. What happened after, since that time?
Oh, I mean, I have just had the privilege of being part of clinical research trials, and I have had the opportunity to sit with all of these pioneering people yeah. and create relationships with them, developing an instructor training program. And that to me has been so exciting because the instructors that gravitate toward the MELT method are such amazing, brilliant, giving humans that they have passed on the MELT message around the world and have right. transformed people's lives far beyond my reach. So to me, that's been, I think, the most exciting part of it is to watch other people really embrace the method as their own and go out there and share people and found the same belief that I do. And now I have my next book comes out in April, MELT Performance. And so this one, instead of just focusing on chronic pain, is also talking about how connective tissue really does play a role in performance and also your emotional state, the psychology behind it and all of these other factors to teach people not just about connective tissue, but also about how the nervous system creates patterns and movements and how to reintegrate better timing of stability right. so that now you have all of the R's of MELT. You've got the 4 R's of MELT and the 2 R's of neurostrength. And I think that this is an exciting time for me. When I wrote the first book, we had a roller that was a little bigger in circumference. And I went out to the general public. And again, they couldn't put the roller under their hips. It was too big. So I had to then change the roller, which made a 30,000 word change to the book. And then we also had a research paper, which also further contoured it. So the edition that's in Dutch and all the other languages is the one that's up to date.
Yeah.
And so now this book, I think, brings the whole methodology together. It's not just about the connective tissue, but now we really bring in the concepts of neurological stability and control so that anybody, it doesn't matter if you're in pain or you just want to improve performance. To me, performance is living. You want to improve living, you need to know the whole method. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. Is it implemented in fitness programs or by therapists?
Yeah, we have 2,000 instructors worldwide.
Right.
They are practitioners, personal trainers, aerobic instructors. We have medical doctors, acupuncturists, chiropractors, even dentists come to take it.
Dentists?
Yes. And because they deal with a lot of people with chronic TMJ and migraines also. Ah. So a lot of them came to learn about it. But I think what is probably one of the coolest things for me is that curious people who are having their, like, let's say their encore career after 65 had found out about it and it transformed their lives. And then they come to take the training because they live in these senior community centers and they think, gosh, I could kind of have like a little side job here and create a community of all these people. And
that's happening too.
Yeah, they teach these classes to their senior communities. And that to me is important because, I mean, you know, you can talk about the nervous system and the connective tissue, but if you ask anyone who is over the age of 80
right.
and healthy, what's the secret? They will tell you it is happiness, it is love, yeah. and it is community. And that, I think, is what MELT does, is it brings communities together to share in self-care. And I would say, you know, self-care is the best care. If you can get people to self-care, you're going to change your communities for the better.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of these older people have done. They've gone back to their communities and created a network for themselves. And it's really enriched the lives of their community, which I think is a tremendous contribution of somebody who had no biology, no neuroscience, nothing behind them have come. And that to me, I think is for me, validates my desire, which is to take really complex science and diffuse it down so that anybody can benefit from what these scientists have discovered. It's important that if you know how to explain science in a simplified way that you do. And I also am lucky that I deal with a wonderful group of brilliant scientists and researchers who want the clinicians to understand.
Does the MELT method also tie into spirituality and philosophy?
You know, people ask me that and I say, you know, no, but I think it ties in somewhere. I don't particularly go down that road because to me, it's that same thing of like consciousness. What's consciousness, you know? But I do believe that Belief and faith is important to anyone. And I think that we do possess in us a healing property. We do have healing cells in our system.
So true. Yeah.
And so what is the spirit? What is the energy body? To me, I feel like connective tissue is the only system in the entire body that has the same shapes and the same design, the same architecture that all living matter does, whether it be animal, vegetable, or mineral. There's these things called icosahedrons, these polyhedric shapes that are now called tensegrity systems, and in the human body, biotensegrity.
Right.
And to me, perhaps the energy body, the spirit, the vibrancy, the thing that brings us up against gravity and to work with it, it, whatever you want to call it, I feel like that might just be the fascial network, that there's something in that system that possesses emotions and feelings, because we know we don't store all of our emotions in our head. If we
we
would all be on, you know, Prozac by the time we were five, just dealing with our family crazy, right?
Yeah.
But we store it in our bodies, and you see that in emotional posturing. You see that in how people react and respond to social situations and things. So.
But that's the energy that also helped you and kept you going from being injured and doing this.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the thing. There's a fine line between science and belief, right?
Sure.
You can have a lot of belief in something and there's no science that can validate it. But a lot of times you don't really need science for a lot of things. Like, you know, can a hug make you happy? Yeah. Well, is there any scientific evidence that it does? It's like, should I give you a hug? Like, why are you even saying that? You know, like, let me give you a hug and you'll just feel it. Like,
yeah.
Why do I need science, you know?
Or exactly.
If I jump out of an airplane with a parachute and somebody doesn't, who do you think is probably going to have a higher chance of living?
Yeah.
It's probably the person with the parachute. I don't need a scientific study to tell me so. It just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So there's, I think that that's an intriguing question, you know, like, does it have to do with spirituality? I would just say define spirituality.
Yeah.
You know,
it's different for everybody.
It's different for everyone, yeah.
So what's your experience with people when it comes to body dissatisfaction?
I think a lot of people who are miserable hate their bodies.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a big problem. The other problem is that I think body dysmorphia is a very big topic. I think there are a lot of people who develop programs and technique that actually prey on the people who have the weak spirit and the weak mind. And they do things that actually are, in my opinion, self-mutilation. They're telling people to actually inflict pain, to get out of pain, to do these things to make themselves feel better about themselves. But it, to me, is just offensive. I just don't believe those things. You know, if you're not doing good in the world and bringing people together and instill hope, then I don't think those things are good, but I think that it's everywhere, unfortunately. And I think that in our culture today, because of social media, I think kids are up against a bigger battle than we ever were when we were kids.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I was bullied a lot when I was a kid. I was the weird one out. I was always strange. People were picking on me.
But there was nothing like institution out there that would say, okay, we're going to help all the people who got bullied when they were younger.
No.
Nowadays, it is.
Yeah, I think that there's less tolerance for bullying and things like that. But I also think that I think that a lot of kids perhaps suffer and don't talk about it. And a lot of times kids, I have to tell you, I work with, you know, infants as often as I do older adults, and young youth and teenagers. Sometimes I see disorders in them that I never saw in kids. I only saw it in like women with menopause.
Right.
And so to me, I think that there's also this, you know, I don't know who I am kind of a thing. I don't know what I love to do. I don't know what I want to be. And I think that kids today are projecting so far out into the future because things are moving so
fast,
that they just can't stay grounded in the present. And, you know, I'm always one of those ones where when the parent is sitting there saying, my kid's problem is this, and they don't that, and they don't this. And I'm like, I hate to say it, but I think you're the problem. I think you need the therapy, not your kid.
Yeah.
Sit down, you know? So I think that there's a big paradigm that needs to happen if we're going to really, I think, save communities. I think that it's a battle right now. I think that people don't have social interactions as they did before. They play sports, laugh, touch. They're doing things through screens. And I think that
all this the time,
is,
too much.
Too much. Yeah. I think it is one of the things that's causing some of the stress psychically is that we're not connecting. And I think that we need to connect.
Your book.
Yes.
The Melt Method. It's translated in Dutch as well.
Yes.
How has it been received by the Dutch audience so far?
Amazing. I just did an immersion this past weekend. I have this 2-day immersion that I do, and we had this wonderful group of a mixed group of practitioners and just people who are suffering with chronic pain came, and they all just seemed so excited about it. And I think the thing, again, that makes people excited about MELT is that it is easy. It's simple to do. It feels good while you do it. It takes 10 minutes a day. It's not something that's replacing anything. Right. You know, it doesn't cause an interruption in any of your beliefs or the things you're doing. It's just a way to address a common problem that diet and exercise don't address. And so I think that it's been exciting to see, how the Dutch community has actually responded to this.
Do you also address the importance of breathing exercises?
I do. I mean, the diaphragm is really important. I think that, you know, again, when you have a high stress state, the diaphragm doesn't move. And actually, the diaphragmatic motion is absolutely critical to neurological stabilization and control. So one of the sequences in the MELT Method book is called the Rebalance Sequence. And it's specifically to address the neurological mechanisms and the regulators of stress and repair to try to induce an activation of what I would call the deep core, your stabilization system, your rooting, the rooting and reflexive core. I call it the neuro core in the MELT Method book. So absolutely, like the diaphragmatic techniques are important. They're not breathing techniques, but they are ways to enhance diaphragmatic motion. And again, diaphragmatic motion, the volume and the vibration and the oscillation of the diaphragm is important to circulation, your lymph system, your digestive system, your posture, your alignment, and your overall well-being.
That's a part of the MELT Method to adapt your sensory nerve system?
Yes, to rebalance it.
To rebalance it.
Yes.
Okay, so it's a very important part.
Yeah. Absolutely critical. You know, again, my desire is to explain that besides, you know, doing abdominal exercises, that there's something else that's there that we could, in fact, address.
Yeah.
And the thing about the diaphragm is that, you know, 28,000 times or so a day, the diaphragm is contracting because your brainstem is activating that contraction. But all of the autonomic components of your body that you could actually consciously address is breathing. You could, if I say, take a deep breath, yes, we can do this. But if I said, digest your food faster.
Yeah.
Make a bowel movement. It doesn't work quite so well, right?
You cannot do
that. Get smarter. No,
yeah.
It doesn't work. But yes, you can control the diaphragm. And so it is, to me, the doorway into the autonomic nervous system and helping to regulate stability and control.
At the moment, you're here for the Dutch book tour.
Yeah.
And what's on the agenda the next couple of days?
We did a 2-day immersion. We met with a lot of clinicians. We chatted with a lot of people. And now we're just planning in 2019. I'm coming back to Europe to start instructor trainings. This is a big leap for me, you know.
Nice.
Getting out of the United States of America and wondering.
Because you've done it there already,
yes,
right?
Yes, many, many times. And that's just it, is when you are an educator and people come from Japan, they come from China, they come from Taiwan. It's kind of mind-blowing to me where we've gotten to. But I think we're really in a paradigm for me to take that big leap and, come into other countries and see if it will translate. And for sure, in the Dutch community, I think that they've gravitated quite quickly to it.
Sure. So if our listeners are interested to get more information, where can they find us?
They can go to meltmethod.com, meltmethod.com. We're also on Facebook under Melt Method and Instagram. So we're always posting and sharing as much information
as we can. You cannot miss it.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we have Melt on Demand. We've got, you know, streaming videos, and they can find the products there. And our instructors, they could find an instructor as well, because there are instructors here in the Netherlands and Amsterdam. So, you know, if they go to the website and they click Find Melt, they'll find instructors that are teaching classes and can share the message with them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Great.
We wish you success.
So, Esmen, thank you very much.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Beste luisteraars, dat was het weer voor vandaag. Onze gastsprekers waren Sylvia Benschop namens de Nederlandse Vereniging voor Veganisme, Hanny Visser, Inger Zijlstra en Tamara met de derde aflevering uit de reeks over Cyrus en de uit New York afkomstige therapeut en auteur van de meldmethode Sue Hitzman. Meer informatie over deze uitzending en onze gastsprekers kun je vinden op helloradio.eu. Zometeen is hier Hello Radio podcast over wensvaders. Veel luisterplezier en tot volgende week.